Hello, everybody. Chris Martinson here. And today we're going to be talking about finance and economics as part of Finance U. Remember, anything that you see in this video and all resources available at our websites or affiliated websites are not intended as or construed as financial advice. This is for educational purposes. Remember, if you have a financial decision, please consult a financial professional. We are not attorneys. We're not CPAs. We are not financial managers. As well, we do our best to be accurate, and everything we represent is as accurate as we know it to be. Now, let's turn to our program. Yeah, it's just, I think people need to be aware of that. They need to know that these markets are, you know, probably rigged in some important way. We got to understand that the pie is no longer growing like it used to. There are strategies that can get you through this, right?
But yes.
It's not what we just did. It's not sort of set it and forget it. This isn't the easy bake markets anymore. Hello, everyone. I am Chris Martinson of Peak Financial University here, or Peak Prosperity, and back with Paul Kiker of Kiker Wealth Management. Paul, so good to be back with you here today.
Good to be back with you as well, Chris. I appreciate all the content you put out recently. It's great.
I know. It's too much even for me to keep track of, but did you watch that interview with Dr. Suzanne Trimbath?
Yes, I did. It was shocking.
Yeah, it was shocking, wasn't it?
I was working on the farm, and two or three times I stopped and got off and rewinded and listened to it again. And I'm like, okay, I just sat there and paid attention to it. I'm like, wow, amazing, shocking.
Yeah. And I had somebody on Twitter say, oh, you know, she doesn't know what she's talking about. I'm like, can you be more specific? Like, oh, you know, market makers, they can't just infinitely short something. I said, well, SEC Regulation 203B-1 says that they don't have any requirement to locate, which means they can just sell shares without locating any. They can just sell them without having them first. So it's right there. I said, which part of this rule do you disagree with? Oh, well, they eventually have to locate them. I'm like, great. Can you point to the code that tells me how much time they have? And do you know how much, even if it's a day, do you know how much damage can be done if somebody's just allowed to just like short fully into a market? And by the way, you know who really needs all that shorting material? That 70% of the market volume now is not retail. We're like 5-6%, mm-hmm. us little guys. It's these players that are doing things, and they're doing things like dynamic hedging. And we now know that options and the 0-day option expiry thing really drives the market. And now we have to learn our Greeks. There's the gamma hedging, there's delta, this and that. And that, so now these market makers, they have to, in a pinch, when things start to blow up, they have to just, if the dynamic hedgers say, I need a billion shares to short, they'll make them up.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other end side of that, somebody bought them, because that's what it means to short a share. You don't just short it into a vacuum. You short it to somebody who thinks they own it.
That's yeah. right.
That's yeah. the game.
And it's amazing. Well, and if there's no checks and balances in the system and they're not tracking that, then what's human nature? They're going to go through the path of least resistance and try to make as much money as possible off of that and let somebody else deal with it behind, and then it gets out of control.
Yep.
What's been
so I think that explains, you know, you and I have been tracking the spore on this for a while, which is like, what happened back in October 23? Because mm-hmm. starting on November 1st, all these markets, and this included US, Germany, Europe, Japan, all of them just started on this track. But let's be clear. Hey, it's Bitcoin. We're all Bitcoin geniuses. Well, it's also gold. It's also Abercrombie yep. and Fitch, as we've described. Like, everything's kind of going up. Mm-hmm. And I want to show you just how crazy this got. Let me show you this. Just came up with this today. So it turned out we were waiting anxiously for Eurozone production numbers to come out, and they expected a punishing 3% decline. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, it was minus 6.7%, right? This was wild. That is 120% miss. It was massive, right? And of course, this happened right. because, yeah, Eurozone industrial production, right? Well, didn't matter to the Eurozone stocks. Wait, this is fun. This is today. This is live futures. This is where the announcement happened. And it just, the stock market went up on a ruler in Europe because... And then it just held flat. So it closed up on the day. It closed green on a day when they said, oh, our industrial production collapsed. Like, these are, like, to put these in perspective for people who don't know, a minus 6.7% year-over-year decline, because that's what these are year-over-year numbers, is astonishingly bad. This is like Great Depression era industrial collapse, right? So all I could think to do was to make up a meme about this, you know?
That's great. It's either cry or laugh, right? That's good.
So that I wrap all that, like, how broken are your markets that they just shrug off a 6.7% industrial collapse?
Yeah.
As if, who cares? Stocks went up.
Well, that has to, that's more than just investor psychology, in my opinion, and looking at that, because I'm looking at the chart, just paying attention to what the price action is, right? So there's the argument that price action already knows this and takes it into consideration. But the problem is the market's not reacting to all the negative revisions. So, okay, let's tell you, let's give you a bunch of deceitful data to begin with on the headline release. We'll let everybody make fun of us, and then we'll quietly readjust the data down somewhere closer to where it is, and nobody's paying attention to it. Nobody cares. I mean, that the market should have had some type of reaction to that. That they absolutely should have. That doesn't make sense.
No, it just sort of goes up and to the right a little bit more. So now it's interesting. Later, you won't have seen this yet because it's coming out just after we finish our recording here. I interviewed Luke Roman, who I love. He's amazing.
I do too. I like his work.
And so I asked him about this behavior that we're describing right now. And he said, look, the Fed is now in a box canyon. So is the Treasury. They're partners in crime. And he said, we're down to that age old Austrian dilemma. Do I protect my bond market, that is the price of money, or do I protect the quantity of money, which is inflation? What do I let go here? And he said, push comes to shove, they're always going to protect the bond market. He had all this data. He said, strike one, they did it here. Strike two, strike three, you got up to five strikes. He's like, I think we're out, you know? And so I think that's another way to interpret this, because I opened with, well, you know, we've seen Bitcoin, Abercrombie stocks, is this potentially early stage Venezuelan stock market, because the markets are sniffing out that dynamic? That is this like currency endgame kind of stuff?
Well, that's what I'm concerned about. You know, I think in our last discussion, I asked the question, could this be the early stages of hyperinflation? And, you know, and I'm not claiming that's the case, you know, but we've got to pay
attention. But the data fits.
But the data fits, right? The data fits because all of a sudden prices are going up, regardless of what's taking place with the underlying economic data. Now, you could argue, well, the Fed's going to cut rates and that's going to turn things around. But how do they cut rates at this point with the money supply expansion and the velocity of money and the inflation that we have without risking hyperinflation? So, you know, my assumption would be that blows up the bond market, you know, if we get a hyperinflationary event, or at a minimum, it causes a currency crisis. So then if you're the investor that's been 80% in the US markets, right, and you just are blindly going ahead and saying, well, that works, that's the only place that I'm going to be, all of the other asset classes from an international commodity, energy, everything else is going to protect your purchasing power far better. So, you know, that's my question. I can't get it out of my head since I started thinking about it last week, is are we going to look back 12 months from now and go, is this the early stages of hyperinflation, right? We're not going to really know until we get out in the future enough to have enough information to see, but we've got to be paying attention to the potential for that, because, I mean, all asset prices are going up, and that's typically what happens in a hyperinflationary event. I would rather own goods quicker than I would rather own the currency, you know, the capital cash that I have on hand right now.
Even if it's from a semi-fusty clothing company.
You know? Yeah, that coin toss.
All right, well, let's steel man this. Let's pretend for a second. So if you knew, let's imagine you're one of these Wall Street insiders, you're privy to, you know, Wall Street's Federal Reserve Open Market Committee meeting minutes, you know what's going on at the BIS. Somehow you have better advisors than, you know, because they're actually in the meetings where these decisions are being made, and you know what's coming. How is anything I'm seeing today, how would it be different? I'm trying to think, like, what would I do? Like, if I knew, I'd get my hands on as much gold as I could, I'd be buying land, I'd be buying I'd be just be getting out of the currency itself into things, stocks, bonds, you know, mm-hmm. commodities, usual stuff, right? I think that's what I'm seeing right now. Otherwise I can't, like how can you possibly square up 6.7% industrial collapse, and I'm using that word carefully, right, and a stock market that says, I don't care, give me more of it.
Yeah, and a deficit that's increasing $1 trillion approximately every 100 days, right? So, I mean, the government's taking on this debt and injecting it into the economy faster than the average individual's wages are going up. The next thing I would do, Chris, is if I was a big sovereign patient investor, a big institution, right? One of the things we've seen with gold prices, it gets rejected, it gets rejected, it gets rejected. I'm going to be very patient, and I'm going to average into that, because if I'm a big buyer, I'm going to move that market big time. Well, if mm-hmm. I had some information that led me to believe that they're going to go ahead and just throw in the towel and let's inflate all of these problems away, then I'm not going to worry about being patient on buying gold. I'm going to buy it now. You know, not a recommendation, right? We're still manning mm-hmm. this. But I'm going to buy now, and I don't care if it moves the market price, because now all of a sudden the downside risk, or you have risk to the downside if you wait to purchase, because if that news becomes common knowledge, then gold prices are going to be increasing dramatically in regard to the money supply.
I agree. Now, it's interesting. There's a driver out there, which I saw a chart recently, which I forgot to say for today, that showed that central banks have bought a lot more gold than retail over the past year and a year and a half.
Yes,
and so look at this. Look at this. I think this is telling, right? We've seen a number of headlines like this, right? But this just came out on March 10th, it looks like. So, yeah, the Chinese, you know, there's this huge gold rush. We've been seeing more and more pictures about that, right? You know, mm-hmm. and they are. Like, the pictures I've seen, unless this is another PSYOP, you know, there's people crushing in buying gold. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
What was interesting was the tweet that was attached to this person, X-Curve, said, take it for what it's worth, random person on Twitter, saying, I can confirm my homie just moved to Hong Kong. The talk of the town is that mainlanders are buying up all the gold they can. He, a real estate guy, asked me if I own gold. LMAO. So this could be a big driver if you have, because it turns out that real estate in China, that bubble is well and truly gone. Mm-hmm. And so people are flocking out of that into other things. Could this be a driver of Bitcoin ETFs here in the U.S., you know, to gold? Sure, could be. Mm-hmm. That's a big market. When the dragon wakes up, lots of things could happen. But I'm seeing gold price moves now that just, I've been watching the market for a long time. It's got some buying pressure under it now that's pretty sustained. That's different.
It really does. And of course, I've been watching gold for a long time as well, and like gold in the portfolio. And when it broke out, I was kind of cynical in my thought process. I was like, this would be a big deal if it wasn't gold, right? They're going to come in and smash this thing down just as soon as they can. I mean, I hate to be cynical from that standpoint, but when those who are paying attention and watching, and I check myself emotionally, I'm like, you know, that's exactly what we do in a complacency. At the worst part of a bear market, of an asset price performance, you get positive signals and you look at it and go, it really doesn't matter, because you're afraid to let your hopes get up because it's been smashed for so long. That's how bottoms happen in asset prices. And bottoms can happen when prices are at all-time highs because you've had such a period of consolidation. So
now, I forget who said this exactly. It might have been Scooter Libby. It's under Bush, the younger presidency. They said, in a time of crisis, the solutions that get adopted are the ones that happen to be lying around. Now, I know that the international folks have all these big fancy plans, special drawing rights. Maybe there's a central bank digital currency framework they've got. But we're watching the BRICS. That's, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China, plus apparently now around 70 countries total have signed up. And they're over here quietly doing what they're doing. If what we're talking about is a currency crisis that's erupting sometime in the next few years, mm-hmm. my prediction is they'll trot out their special drawing. They'll try some things. Mm-mm. It's a crisis. You know what we're going to use? Something that's been lying around for about 6,000 years. I'm smelling the potential for remonetization of gold, which is why I think it's mispriced. Because we both know they've been smashing the price for a long time to make their fiat experiment look better than it actually deserves. But that's okay. So they play the game. I appreciate it because I get to buy it cheaper. I'm okay. So for everybody listening, a call option is an option you buy, you pay some money, that gives you the right but not the obligation to purchase something at a later price, right? Mm-hmm. So I could say my call option is when I buy gold today at $21.78 an ounce, it has an embedded call option, Paul, that I don't think is priced in, which is what would that new price be if this event happens and the event is it gets remonetized or partially remonetized? Mm-hmm. What's that new number? I suspect it's higher. And people do fun things. You know, you take the amount of gold, divide it by your favorite monetary aggregate number, and you get stupid numbers, right? 5,000, 10,000, 90,000 an ounce, weird numbers. Mm-hmm. I actually think it has a call option that's mispriced right now.
I agree with that. Well, you know, what's interesting, if you go back to the end of the gold bull market in the 1970s, if I remember correctly, I've got the chart somewhere in my files in there, but the value of gold was 125% at the peak and at the end of the gold run from the 1970s to early 80s, at whatever point that ended, I can't bring it to mind in my picture right now, but it was 125% of all dollars in circulation. So, and I wish I had that number. So that was the indication that, okay, there's more gold out there than the dollars that are circulating. That is not the case today. I can't remember what the numbers are. Do you know what the number is, Chris? But it's minimal compared to the dollars in circulation, the gold that, you know, we have inside the United States right now.
This should be an easy question to answer, but you can't, because what's money, right? So
that's right.
Well, they used to add it up, right? M1 was currency and bills. M2 was checking deposits, electronic sort of registries and demand, and also CD accounts, time deposits. And then there was MZM, which was like, well, but these people have these short-term treasury bills. It's kind of like money. You know, it got complicated. But right now, as of today, I think they're closing in on $18 trillion of M2. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. allegedly has 261 million ounces of gold in Fort Knox and other places. And I say allegedly, because they've been fighting an audit on this tooth and nail forever and ever. And I'm like, that seems simple. Yeah. That's like a weekend for somebody, like open the vault. Are the bars there? You know, take a few samples, call it a day. They've been fighting that since 1974. Like, no, you can't know. Like, well, why not? You know?
That's kind of like my son at one point when he was at the house and I'm like, what are you looking at on your phone? He's like, nothing, Dad. I'm like, give me your phone. And he bolts into the other room, right? I'm like, no, you come here. I get that phone. I don't want to, somebody doesn't want you to see because they've got something to hide. Now.
Exactly.
Hey, so, one thing. Let's see.
If that was 18 trillion, which is 18,000 million divided by 261, let's pretend they have everything in there. What is that number? Yeah, that would be a big number for gold.
It's big enough, you're hesitant to say it, right? That's a really big number. So, but yeah, I mean, and that's the point. And here's my argument. We've talked about this before, but why in the world would China have a currency and sovereign trade with other nations that can be exchanged for gold if it didn't have any value, right? So from a, they have received the worst part of the U.S. abuse of our position as a global reserve currency. So what do they resort to? Do business with us as a nation, as an alternative, because you can exchange for gold in our currency on the yuan. So, I mean, that's an alternative that's out there. And if our leaders are going to continue to be foolish and drive our currency into the ground, well, what are people going to do? It makes sense that they're going to go to a hard asset that's held its value over time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, as I've been scratching away at this great taking series and digging in further and further, and I've gone way further into legal language than I've ever meant to in this lifetime. Not my thing, but I've had to figure it out. Paul, the more I scratch into our system, the less I think I know about it for sure, and the more alarmed I get, because every time I scratch at it a little bit, it's like, is this just made opaque so that white shoe law firms will have plenty of work going forward? Or it's not a bug, it's a feature of the system. It is needlessly complicated, because in those crevices of complexity is where the raccoons come in and move the stuff around while you're not looking. You know, I'm really shocked at how little I knew about this overall system. And I'm shocked by how people who are, I've been schooling some financial firms and and so-called professionals in this, not you, but I mean, there've been people who said stuff to me confidently that's wrong. And I have to show them the code. I'm like, here it is in black and white, right? Here's rule 201B-1. Here's 546E. Here it is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I think you're just misinterpreting that. No, I'm not. Mm-hmm. Right. It's been amazing. So even people that's like coming up on an electrician who's never heard of three phase power before. Like, you know?
Yeah.
It's
that
weird.
Doesn't exist. Right. Like they just want to say that doesn't exist. And confidently. And that's what I'm finding is we're looking for alternatives on how to position assets to protect clients. You know, one of the things I'm finding is the system is just not set up. It's set up to drive you into the great taking circumstances because the effort that it takes to be able to, you know, we're finding ways as alternatives to be able to offer, but now it's okay. How do we do this logistically? Right. How do we put this together and make it affordable and be able to work with people and protect their assets and position it around. And it's amazing the time that we're putting in from that standpoint, just running a brick wall to get people to give us honest and true answers and then find the right people within the organizations after hours of phone calls that can actually answer, you know, the legal side of that from their point. So I do understand now why, you know, when we were talking, I was shocked because there were individuals that were just, oh, this is no big deal. You know, that, you know, it's not worth looking into. It is worth looking into because we as advisors have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that our clients are in a position to be protected from that. And that's something that we have to take seriously. And if there's something that questions the viability of your ownership of the shares as an advisor, mm-hmm. we have to, that's what I was talking with my compliance department about. We have to go and find every avenue that we can to educate the clients and put them in a position to protect them. Because if this stuff does blow up, you know, and I don't believe that they would put it into play, hopefully it never does, right? We hope that it doesn't, but why would they put it into place and put this much effort into place to set the system up that way? Well, clients are going to go, okay, why didn't you protect me? And how did you not know this? Right. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're a fiduciary. Well, and I'll tell you something else. So I went back, I listened to the Creature from Jekyll Island, the fifth edition mm-hmm. by Edward Griffin after yeah. reading The Great Taking. Oh, that, yeah, I didn't sleep very good the next night.
1-2 punch.
Like, yeah. It's like, oh gosh, it ties right in. Right. So, if you yeah. want to stay up at night and do something besides, you know, focus on the danger that's out there, please go read that after you have The Great Taking. So it's not a warm and fuzzy at all.
Well, I'll tell you. So and this is where, you know, if you really want to like not sleep the whole week, you put the crash course on top of that. Right. So mm-hmm. in the crash course, my basic position is in a time of rising abundance, you can make all kinds of mistakes, you know. You
yes.
can do this stuff. You get a creature from Jekyll Island. They make these overly complicated rules, but there's enough for everybody, for Wall Street to skim its fair share and for mm-hmm. us to also feel like we're getting wealthier. The trouble starts when that pie isn't growing the same anymore. And Wall Street still wants its fair share. And the government doesn't know how to make hard decisions anymore because it's had three generations of not ever having to make a trade-off. And we'll have a war and a tax cut, you know? And so, you know, that's easy times create the weak men story, right? So mm-hmm. I think that's where we're at. And I think it takes extra due diligence. And I think people need to be informed that the game is changing. We have the old rules, but we have this new world. And so that's the place where I think if you're thoughtful and you don't fall for that old story, which is like, oh, don't worry your pretty little head. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah. you know, it won't happen. Maybe.
Yeah.
But I truly believe this is an era where great things, families will be ruined and made in times like this. For the same reason that we saw that in Weimar Germany. Some people came, like, you remember the bellhop with the gold coin, right?
Yes.
Came out of there with like a hotel at the end of that.
Yes.
Right?
Well, and you know, and the student that went to Harvard University, well, Harvard or a U.S. university, and his family was sending him a little bit of spending money, and he saved it. And because it was in U.S. dollars, when the German mark collapsed, he came back and bought the whole neighborhood for his family and the community the neighborhood that he grew up in. Like, there are people that are that if they take the time to set aside a few assets to be protected, to get some insurance, do everything that they can do to protect, you know, because it may be 7 years, it may be 7 months, who knows? But if the trigger is there, if you're diligent, that's how you survive and you become a kinsman redeemer per se, or you become the individual that is in a position to take over the leadership realm, at a minimum protect your family and the community that's around you. So it's important, right? Proverbs is one of my favorite books. You know, two times in Proverbs, it tells us the prudent foresee danger and hide themselves while the simple pass on and are judged for it. So, you know, you're being prudent. We're doing our best to be prudent. For those of you that are listening, if you're prudent, you know, that's different than speculation and gambling. If you're prudent, you foresee danger. So you've been warned of this danger. Now you have a choice. You can either prepare for that danger or you can pass on and be simple and be judged for it. So, you know, there are two mm-hmm. paths that we all have a choice to take. And the path of prudence is where you and your family, and you're a good steward of your assets on the other side of this.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the more I read of the Bible, cause I'm really taking my first tour through it here, at this stage of my life. And it's just, humans have been here before. We've done this over and over again, right? We've gotten imprudent and then wrath happens, right? But often I'm reading these stories, and one way I can read them is like, yeah, people lose the plot line over and over again, which is mm-hmm. be kind to each other, treat each other with respect, and you know, be not just totally consumed with the material stuff in the world, right?
Yes.
Well, I think, you know, I'm really struggling to see how my so-called leadership isn't just 100% materialistic and just absolutely insisting that we all just mm-hmm. go down this path. And of course, the WEF is just like, they say it out loud. We don't need God anymore. Yeah. We got evolution. We'll just rewrite the programming of cells. We have all these useless eaters, of course, but, you know, we'll find something for them to do. It's just, it's like, I think I read about this. Yes, I did.
You know? You did. Well, you know, and another thing is too, it's like I try to teach my kids, because this is a practice that I've had. You know, the Bible says that there's one man that's generous, but yet has more. Proverbs said that, and one man withholds and loses everything. So I've always said, you know, you go back and you look at the big businesses that have the business owners that start it, right? Every business owner that I know that their team goes to work really hard, they share that wealth with their employees that get there, because that individual had a goal, a desire, a skill set. They wanted to make a difference and they built this major business. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So those individuals will support, like, some of the most successful clients that I know will tie the portion of their money. They give a portion to help those in need. And I believe that that's important, because I believe giving is the antibiotic to greed, right? Like I'm going to help others. I'm going to share and pull up. It's not socialism, but it's helping others. So if you give, you've got that antibiotic for greed. And those that are, you know, but what we're seeing in Wall Street right now is, let's take everything that we can. Let's mm-hmm. take all that we can. And it's a game. It's like, oh, this is a stupid person, so I'll go take from them. I deserve it more than they do. And that's what's running our society right now. At least that's the way it seems to be. And, you know, that greed is what in the end consumes the individual that's pursuing greed. And their end journey is far worse, you know, than what the individual that gives and shares. Because when society comes apart, if you've been a giver, if you've been a blessing to others, if you have treated others as you want to be treated yourself, then you've got a community that's around you, right? You've got people, individuals. That person that took from everybody is the one that has nobody there beside them, and they're with nothing and all alone in the end.
Yeah. You know, I was speaking with an executive coach who works with very high level, big name people, and asked her, you know, what's that really about? you know, and she said, oh, you know, they all come and basically they're all saying, how do I do what I do, but better, which is they want more, right? Can I have more success, better quarterly profits? I want, you know, my staff to be functioning better. She said, it takes about 2 months and I work through them. And she said, I achieve success when I do, when I can get them to understand that the gateway word to happiness is enough.
Enough, yeah. Yeah.
All of them have enough and they're not happy. So she said, my first job is just to get them to happy, right? Mm-hmm. And Wall Street never has enough. It's never enough. No. Billionaires need more billionaires, you know, $1 billion, you know, they need to be more billionaire, as I say, you know, it's just like when you never have enough, you're in that perpetual state of wanting. And that's how I see Wall Street is coalesced around. In fact, it's enshrined. In fact, it's glorified the greed. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you're not greedy enough, you won't make it there. If you are not willing to take from that person because they're too stupid to see you taken from them, yeah, you won't make it there. You will be you will be weeded out. Right. So,
well, you know, just, what's interesting is going back to that in Wall Street, you know, so this is my 26th year of dealing with Wall Street through the 2000 collapse, the 2008 collapse. I've been there, done that, and a little cynical when it comes to all the hopium that gets out there for people who haven't operated through that. But knowing what I know about Wall Street and how they'll lean, and corporations will lean towards max profit regardless of the consequences, right? Was one of the reasons that I decided not to take the, how can I phrase that, when the liability shield was put around the company so that if you take the jab, you know, the moment that that statement was made, I told the family, I said, I'm not doing it. And then when you came out and started educating and you get all that data, I was like, yeah, that was the right decision. But I was very concerned about the lack of consequences, because the lack of consequences, especially in the pockets of Wall Street, is what makes a difference. Mm-hmm. Hey, one thing, when we were still manning that, it's been burning on my mind. I want to share something here and kind of talk through, and I think we've talked about this before, but going back to what would I do, okay, if I knew inside information that we were going to have a event in our currency. Okay. So can you see my, can you see my screen right there, Chris?
It's coming up now. It's up. I see it.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, good. So basically what I'm showing is this is the major market indexes from January 1st of 2008 until today. Okay. So you've got the S&P 500 here is up 252% as of today since January 1st, 2008. That's essentially been the only game in town, right? So starting at about 2014, we've had this popularity contest, this herd mentality, where not only U.S. investors have been chasing the index at the expense of everything else, but you've got international investors that have been chasing the U.S. Index at the expense of everything else. So the blue line is commodity index. That's the GNX. So that's just the general commodity index. And you can see that's at 6.5% below where it was January 1st, 2008. Mm-hmm. Now you got emerging markets, which is down 15% from what it was in 2008. And then you've got developed markets that are up, you know, 3.8. So developed markets being Germany, you know, Australia, Canada, so forth. Now we've seen this before. So I don't have the data on this going back prior to 1995, but it gives a representation. So from 1990 to 2000, the U.S. index was up 315%. Now, during both of those periods, you had a strong dollar, okay, during both of those 10-year periods there. Everything else didn't. Now, you go from 2000 to 2007, okay, we endured the 47% decline that took place from 2000 to 2003. The S&P 500 from 2000 to 2007 had a 0% return. Got 50% decline, approximately got back to even. But look at what commodities and emerging markets did. So commodities were up 213% versus 155. Now, during that period of time, if I can go in here, I think, well, I've got a gold chart, but what I want to go back and show is the dollar. So the one thing that would be that we have in common during that 2000, this chart's not very clear and it'll take me longer to update, but basically you had a peak in the dollar starting in about 2001 and it went down to its ultimate bottom in 2008. Mm-hmm. So my point being is, if we were to end up into an inflationary situation because of this excess spending, they choose to inflate our way out of this at some point. you're going to see international assets be the inverse relationship to what the U.S. dollar is. So not only would I be looking at gold and silver, not as a recommendation, guys, this is a hypothetical steel manning here, but I would be looking to really good commodity producing countries that have been overlooked for the past 15, 16 years. Money's not easy for them to get because everybody wants to send it in the United States. So they're running their companies mean and lean and profitable. And that's where the next major investment returns will probably come from if we get into a currency crisis, inflationary event inside the United States. And your traditional modern portfolio theory is not going to make an adaptation for that, right? Not until it's too late. And then by the time that Wall Street, you know, the traditional modern portfolio individuals throw in the towel, now they're going to have to learn how to navigate in that market. And it takes time and experience to be able to do so. So, you know, there's unbelievable opportunities out there right now for those investors that are aware, have a plan in place, understand the reason why they're doing it, and patient enough to make those allocations and adaptations as the information unfolds.
Oh, very well said. So I like that perspective. And I would like to, well, this is, no, I whenever I mention an individual name of a stock, it's not a recommendation for or against, nothing. It's just, I just want to look at the shapes of these things real quick, because it's back to this idea that, you know, you showed that decline in the dollar from 2000 to 2008. Are we getting into another era here where we might see a similar sort of a decline? And we said, well, maybe because of the shapes of some of these charts, right? Which, let me make this a little bigger, right? This is Abercrombie and Fitch, and you can see that explosive burst there. This is a 96. So what's that, a 28-year-old chart, right? Yeah. So over 28 years, it's sort of been in this range here between, you know, let's call it 20 to 50. And then all of a sudden it just does this. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Well, NVIDIA over that same range, right? See that shape right there? We've seen this shape many times in the past. How about Supermicro just got added to the S&P 500? This shape again. We're seeing this over and over and over again. And fortunately for me, or unfortunately, I have enough gray hairs to know what that means because I've seen it. This isn't my first rodeo. Unfortunately, it's my third bubble rodeo.
Yeah. But the first one was limited to technology. The second one was limited to real estate. Now this is everything, right?
Everything. It's the everything
except for commodities. And, you know, and that's an asset class that few people have exposure to because it's been negative, you know, no returns for so long. People get bored and they walk away. And that's usually when the greatest opportunities reveal themselves.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, we have all these farmers who are busy protesting all over the world, right? And I've made this point several times in the past. This bothers me a lot, Paul, this idea that today, for a bushel of corn, you're going to pay this amount here, which, if you can see this black line, is the same amount that you would have paid in 2007. So the poor farmers out there growing corn are getting the exact same nominal price. This is not an inflation-adjusted chart. The same nominal price they received in 2007. Can you imagine walking to an insurance agent and they charge you 2007 auto insurance rates, or, you know, you can buy groceries at 2007 prices.
Yeah. Rent, groceries.
How is this possible? How is this even remotely possible? Right. So of course the farmers are protesting. This is, they're just being hemorrhaged. I don't understand it. Something is really broken in our markets where the producers get the least, and we've asked them to put up with the exact same pricing for, what is that, 17 years in a row?
Yeah.
17 years, no input price increase. Zero, not for you.
That's
your
right.
Input costs, those have gone up.
Yeah.
Right?
And if you're a small business farm, you've got the corporations that are coming in and purchasing the farms and competing with you. Well, they've got other sources of revenue, so they can cut their prices to drive you out. And and then you're not appreciated by the powers that be in Washington because they're so far removed from the soil and working the land that they see you as a, you know, completely foreign individual. So being a farmer is tough to be in today's society, but it's something that we all have to have and that we all need. We need farming. or otherwise we're all in trouble, especially in today's just-in-time inventory society, as busy as everyone is.
Absolutely. Well said. And it's mining, right? Mm-hmm. It's pretty much all input commodities have been, somehow we've got a system that loves and rewards and lionizes all things financial. And so mm-hmm. we're like, oh, this is great that these hedge fund managers, oh, isn't it amazing? They earned $1.8 billion last year. Earned, mm-hmm. right? Did nothing, right? Mm-hmm. For I like, you're like, well, at least these were made by my hedge fund. Like, no, they don't make anything.
No, they don't.
They make nothing. Right?
They might drive the price of those up, but they don't make them.
Yeah. They won't make them, right? But meanwhile, the original input production, the source of value always starts with that raw material producer and going into that industrial value chain. And so mm-hmm. for me, you know, to close where we started, to see Europe's industrial production collapse 6.7% year over year, this is Eurozone, this isn't just Germany, mm-hmm. Is such an amazing thing. And to watch these markets that are all about the financialization of them now, they just shrugged. Like, who needs mm-hmm. that? We don't need no stinking industry, you know?
Yeah.
It's just,
well, it kind of reminds me, Chris, of the run. You know, one thing that amazed me is when you were warning everyone about the COVID potential, you know, before the shutdowns, you're warning people, kind of sharing this mm-hmm. is out there, this could potentially be coming. And I'm listening and I know I've followed you long enough. I know you're on top of it, but I'm watching the markets and the markets were just a stair tread higher. Like they're running forward and ignoring it. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, how could the markets be ignoring this and with this backdrop and this potential? Because if this can be horrible, because you started talking, I remember correctly, December, January, before, several months before all of that mm-hmm. took place. And then upon the lockdowns, it wasn't till the lockdowns that wham, the markets got hammered to the downside. So you've got the markets right now that are absolutely ignoring the deterioration that's taking place under the surface of the economy. You've got the markets that are absolutely ignoring the higher inflation numbers that we have rolling and celebrating, you know, like you were talking about in your update yesterday, how they had a breakdown. That was very good breakdown. And then all of a sudden they take off and close higher for the day. And I remember I was sitting at the end of the day, looking at the news and going over everything. Cause I have price alerts that take place and I'm just going, what's everybody thinking, right? Like the market runs mm-hmm. on a potential rate cut and then inflation numbers are coming in high, especially in the core inflationary numbers. And, you know, so this is, people are feeling it. You look at food prices are 19% higher under this administration at this point. They're at an all-time high. It's not backing off. I'm hearing more people talk about how they're feeling the impact of inflation. And the markets just absolutely ignore the number. Like they celebrated like all of a sudden higher inflation means we're going to get a rate cut. Like that just doesn't make sense right now. The markets are completely ignoring and complacent to the data that's under the surface. Maybe because we're either, you know, the only two things that make sense to me is these are the early stages of a potential currency crisis event, hyperinflation, and the smart people are throwing in the towel, right? Or, you know, there's just the belief that the Fed's going to come in and save the day. But neither one of those are where you should put your hard-earned life savings faith in to bet on. Because, right, it's a speculation.
It is. I'm going to see if I can find it real quick because he put it really well about this inflation. So we should have been talking about. Yeah, here it is. I found this very useful. I like how Ben Hunt puts things quite often. This is one of those times he said, friends, every month I make the same post. Inflation stopped going down 8 months ago. Right. Wage and price inflation is embedded well above target, which is 2%. So he's right. I mean, it looks like, oh, yeah, look how much inflation has come down. But mm-hmm. it's actually slightly up from where it was 8 months ago. Mm-hmm. So that means it's embedded and it's happening. And, you know, if the Fed really wanted to get on top of this, they would actually want to drive the inflation rate into negative territory for a period of time to get us back to that long-term trend line. Because remember, we had that 2% trend line, and then we mm-hmm. popped way above it. And they're just going to mm-hmm. try and hold it there and pretend like that's okay. But, you know, inflation is here. People know it. We all know that whatever the inflation number is, you got to kind of double that, you know, in your own life. They tell me that actually medical services went down slightly in price last year, but I can tell you that my insurance policy went up 14.8%. You know, it's been double digit increases for 10 years straight. So, you know, Worst year ever, 26. Lowest ever was like 13. So we're kind of on the low end of that. But I mean, that's been my experience, but they tell me it's 4% or 3 or even a little negative. So yeah, it's just, I think people need to be aware of that. They need to know that these markets are, you know, probably rigged in some important way. We got to understand that the pie is no longer growing like it used to. There are strategies that can get you through this, right?
But yes.
It's not what we just did. It's not sort of set it and forget it. This isn't the easy bake markets anymore, you know?
No, I really wish it was. I'd probably start playing golf again, but there's not time for that right now. This is not an environment where you can, right?
Yeah.
So this is an environment really where you have to be diligent. You have to be aware. You have to be surrounded by people that you trust. Not that they're going to be perfect, right? But it's fighting tooth and nail, because it's kind of like I was reading James the other day. If you ask for wisdom, you will get it. So if you ask for wisdom, you set your mind towards seeking for that wisdom. You're going to find it, because you're not looking for a magic answer, right? Magic answer is like giving some, taking them fishing and giving them a fish. But if you're seeking for wisdom, you're constantly learning how to fish. You're constantly learning how to manage those assets better. You're constantly learning how to adapt. You're building portfolios ahead of time so that if we did end up in a currency crisis, I hope we don't. And I'm just asking that question because a lot that's not making sense in the market. I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen right now, but I can tell you, I'm going back and double checking the portfolios that we built so that if you're two steps ahead of the average individual, if that's where we're going, that's the difference between being successful and not, because you got to break yourself from the herd at some point and have confidence and courage to run in that direction. Because if the building gets on fire, that door is a lot small. You know, if there's 1,000 people in that room or 10,000 people in that room and you know, you see smoke, if I see smoke, I'm going to start moving towards the exit. I'm still going to listen and enjoy the concert, but I'm going to head towards that exit, because if you're two steps ahead of the average person in that herd, that may be the difference between surviving and not.
I totally understand that. And of course I agree. And I actually think that gold and silver, two separate concepts for me. Let's talk gold for a second. I actually think, Paul, that this is going to be a before and after story. We go to sleep one Friday. It's $2,200 an ounce. We wake up on Monday and it's some other number, right? Why? Because if they have to remonetize, you would just want to do that over a weekend. It's like, when does the FDIC take over a bank on a Friday, right? There's a reason for these things. And I truly think that's, you know, the era we're going to go in. It's kind of like, you know, a lot of people like to think they've got all this time. I have these talks all the time. They're getting increasingly awkward for people. They're like, well, I understand what you're saying, Chris, but if things get bad, I'll buy a place in the country. Like, no. Yeah, you and every other person at the same time, you know?
I can tell you what's interesting. So when we bought our farm up here in 2020, we hadn't listed our house for sale yet. And I'm, you know, I fell in love with the piece of property, but I remember looking at it and I was kind of like, well, do we really need this? Is this really where we want to? Cause we were selling family land and moving, you know, where we'd raise the kids. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting down one night and I'm praying about it and I'm looking, trying to figure out, you know, and talking to my wife, seeking wisdom. So I did another search, and in the period of time from the time I made the contract to the 90 days later from where we closed, we went from like 15 pieces of property over 50 acres to less than 5. And I'm like, and now it's hard to find larger pieces of land. So you're right. They're going to be gone from by the, you know, when you decide that you need to do it in mass, everybody else has already decided, or there's people that are two steps ahead of you that have made that decision. And if you do get to buy it, you're going to have to spend a lot more capital than what you did before. So that's very wise.
I ran the numbers, cause I had the same, I don't know what got you and Holly off on this, but somewhere around summer of 2019, my spidey senses were just jangling again. Mm-hmm. Now this was for market reasons, cause there was this repo thing. There was other things happening. I didn't know COVID was coming, but this all played out okay, because I listened to that intuition. Evie's intuition was in the same place. We said, let's start looking. So my process, right? You do the Zillows, the Redfins, then there's the land thing, there's land vest, there's private stuff. I was scouring classifieds, everything. I knew in a 3-state area, Paul, every single piece of property with more than 10 acres. Mm-hmm. Right? That was my minimum cutoff. And I was looking for larger. And after winnowing through that, in across all three states, there were about 100 properties that were somewhere on this, and 80 of them were just like on there like garbage, but they I wouldn't consider them, right? House was wrong, wasn't solar oriented, soil was really bad, but you say, well, I could maybe squint at it. So, but let's say that we did have that 100 properties. My next question was, what percent of Boston would have to decide, I'm out, I want to leave the city, before my entire buy list, crap or not, was completely taken up? And the answer was 0.001%.
It doesn't even take much of an event for that to happen.
Nope. Nope. So if even 1% of people get the vibe and say, I got to move to the country, I think my strongest advice for them is, if you wait, you won't, it won't be, it just won't be a possibility, or you'll be living so far out in this piece of land that you never thought, that's just not the life you want to live. It's too far from everything. It's just something, you know, I guess, but yeah, these are before and after stories. So if you feel it coming, you know, if people are feeling it, like, talk to Paul, get a plan, work it out, get moving.
Yeah, I've had a lot of fun. I've had some individuals. We've made sure that they were set, you know, right? Because you got to plan like this is not going to happen. We're all going to have to retire at some point in the future. So make sure you're set. Make sure you're ready. Make sure you got the assets that are set aside. And then, okay, here's assets that we can put somewhere else. So I've had a lot of fun with individuals that, okay, we're good here. We've got X amount of resources that we can reallocate to our desire to pick up some foreign land, to pick up this second place that we can have. So it's been really fun in helping people see and plan prudently and then pursue the decisions that they can and have the resources to make to be able to put themselves in a good position. It's exciting.
Excellent. Well, for everybody who's interested in talking with Paul and his team, please go to peakfinancialinvesting.com, fill out a simple form, emails get sent out, and you will be contacted. So with that, Paul, thank you so much for your time again today. Another great conversation.
It's my honor, Chris. Always look forward to it.
Hello, Chris Martinson. I'm the CEO of Peak Prosperity and also Peak Financial Investing. And after watching that, you're probably wondering, well, what do I do with my money? Look, you both deserve and need somebody who can talk to you about what's really going on in this world, understand the situation as it is, not be steering you towards certain things that don't make sense for you or just keep you in a game that's already ended. Look, if you want to talk to somebody about the petrodollar declining or what is happening with gold or which sectors are actually the best ones to be in, given what the Federal Reserve is up to or the federal government, you deserve to talk to somebody who can answer those and has a few gray hairs and has been there through some of the economic cycles because, hey, we're in another economic cycle, so it's good to have that experience. Fortunately, at Peak Financial Investing, what we do is we go out and we scour and we look for the very best firms out there who satisfy one thing above all else. They've got great experience coupled to great customer service. So if you want to come by peakfinancialinvesting.com, there's a very simple form you can fill out, just a few fields. You hit send. What happens is an email gets triggered out. It goes to an endorsed firm of ours. You will get an email back. You can then set up a phone call for a 30 to 45 minute free, no obligation, no pressure call to find out if this firm is a good fit for you and to find out if you're a good fit for the firm. It has to go both ways. And if all that matches up, this will be one of the best things that could happen to you this year. So please come by peakfinancialinvesting.com. Very simple process. We would love to help you if we can. Thanks very much.